When Kim Shuck assumed the position as the 7th Poet Laureate of San Francisco in 2017, she felt a little embarrassed.
I'm not a drum majorette. I'm a poet, and I spend a lot of my time sitting in a quiet corner all by myself doing my thing. And eventually, if you get good enough at sitting in a quiet corner by yourself doing your thing, they will come and slap a title on you, which requires you to stand on stages more often.
Now one of the inaugural Academy of American Poets Laureate Fellows, she's more comfortable in the role that allows her to encourage other poets to grow writing and reading series within their own communities across the city. Find out about this initiative funded by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation and hear from her two award-winning poetry books published in 2019, Deer Trails and Murdered Missing. That's ahead today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam. Since her first poetry book, Smuggling Cherokee, in 2005, Kim Shuck has explored her paternal Native American roots in the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, but it's her maternal side that ties her to San Francisco. This teacher, weaver, and beadwork artist raised her family in the city of her birth, living in the same old home owned by her Polish great-grandparents. That part of her heritage is also woven into Deer Trails, San Francisco Poet Laureate Series number 7 from City Lights Books, winner of the Northern California Golden Poppy Book Award for Poetry in March 2020. We'll hear from that collection first in this August 2019 reading at Haskell Indian Nations University's Tammany Library in Lawrence, Kansas, with another publisher of Kim Shuck's work to introduce her, Bookmark Press's Ben Furnish.
She's a contributor to the anthology The World is One Place, Native American Poets Visit the Middle East, and we had an event in celebration of that anthology here in this very library a couple of years ago. This was published by Bookmark Press at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, which I manage and which is a co-sponsor of today's event. And we are very happy to have Kim back. Kim is the Poet Laureate of San Francisco. She is a citizen of Cherokee Nation. She is notable also as a visual artist, particularly with traditional Cherokee beadwork. The cover of this book, The World is One Place, is one of her images. And very recently, she was awarded one of 13 special fellowships from the Academy of American Poets for $75,000?
Yeah.
So please welcome Kim Shuck.
Maybe some people here will understand when I say that getting a check that big scared me. I don't know that anybody in my family ever made that much in a year, and it all came in one check. But it's not for me. It's for me to give away, which has been the most fun. I've really been enjoying that. I don't know what a poet gets paid. So I thought, hey, what was the most I got paid last month for doing a show? So everybody who comes and reads in that series is getting paid the most I got paid the month before I submitted the thing, which is so much fun. Because when you hand somebody a check and they go, I can make rent. It's a good deal. I was so happy to come back here. I speak in a lot of places. Oh, Lord love him. Last night there was this man who came up to me. I'm CNO. And this guy came up to me and said, I worked for a while in South Dakota. And I went, that's great. With Lakota people. Uh-huh. He said, what I noticed about your culture, and I was like, let me stop you there. That's not my culture. Respectful. I'm glad you did the work. I'm not Lakota. And he said, right, but American Indian culture. And I was like, this is almost literally the one place that nobody's ever approached me with that. And it's really relaxing, and I thank you so much. When I first became Poet Laureate of San Francisco, people started saying, this is our first Native American Poet Laureate of San Francisco. I kept telling people, even if I didn't know everybody who had done it, I'd say you were probably wrong. What I am is the first enrolled citizen of a recognized Native nation. But I replaced a man named Alejandro Murguia. And the third poet laureate was Devorah Major, who is Indigenous Caribbean. So I'm certainly not the first Western Hemispherian, right? And that one's been following me around a lot, particularly because in San Francisco and in other places, folks look for it. I'll be introduced as Cherokee is usually what they say. So that's been hilarious for many, many reasons. My favorite one, though, is when they question it. And I usually share this because this is a pro tip. The Cherokee Nation made a documentary about me, which was embarrassing also, but it's a fun thing to throw at people when they question my identity because they probably wouldn't have done that if they weren't sure. It's a guess I'm making. This is my new book, published by City Lights Books. It's called Deer Trails, and it's kind of a love letter to San Francisco. This was cool. It was right before Winona LaDuke was to speak, just because you guys might enjoy that fact as much as I did, in Monterey. Before the reading, I watched the bats orbiting, courting. There are fat moths here to catch. The hunting's good. The bats remind me that the hunting's good. In Culver City, we tuck ourselves in and listen to the thunder. There's thunder and the crickets and at least one frog singing along. The hunting's good. Dangerous. I have put my body in dangerous places. And wasn't being my father's daughter dangerous? Traveling in possession of a womb and a brain, crumpled bits of understanding and expectation hidden under a false lining of these shoes, a willingness to walk with my sisters, to sit, not quiet, but talking in among the beans, seeds, plants passed hand to hand, the unpublished poems whispered to dried sage leaves and handed on in hope. Asada, you are my relative, my teacher, a woman in danger as we all are in these and other times. A woman whose face is on a poster, whose fingerprint can be waved, can be called up. We were not meant to live this long. We were none of us meant to live this long. Endangered, in danger, dangerous. How many of you have been to San Francisco? Lots of you. So they've piped all the creeks under. They're still there, but they're in culverts underground. And one of them runs through my grandmother's garden. Arroyo Dolores. Ghost arroyo, filled in but digging, redigging. Sad creek never ran all year. And now it's so frail, we feed her water mouthful by mouthful. We feed her, our ravenous sister, under the full moon. November moon that also fills the ghost wash, ghost water glowing back. Glowing back and guarded by the bay laurel roots that have found her, and we feed her mouth and mouth of water, of light, of root. Please tell my family I'm alive. It's hard to know where we are with everything broken and scattered. War and weather will do that, and there's weather to come. We need to decide what we all understand and what is local, survived like a single teacup. It's always strange what's spared and what's taken. The chair has come apart and roof pieces mixed in with spilled sugar. That horrible quilt of your mother's is okay. Storm sound has marked me. I'll never stop hearing it. It's shocking how the idea, safe as houses, and we did feel safe. We pulled our ideas around us like the wooden walls, and we thought we knew. I'm going to read one more. Ritual. Today, I'm burying words in jars under the bay laurel. Snugged between plum roots, word preserves in jars for quieter times. I'm burying her words for when her words run thin or stop. She knows some things, so I'm saving them, nothing like the poems of summer abandon, because that's a thing to find each for each, because wonder is a practice, a prayer, or whatever you like to call it, but these jars, now they're a real thing. Maybe a recipe for beans or fish or biscuits that no one else can follow. Something very time and person specific, like any good religion.
San Francisco Poet Laureate Kim Schock, reading from Deer Trails on New Letters on the Air, recorded at Haskell Indian Nations University.
I deal with students a lot who are not Indigenous, who have questions about these things. I usually explain that in my opinion, and this is my opinion, blood quantum is a thing basically invented in order to paper erase us, you know? One of my favorite writers is Wendy Rose, and she used to call herself the only full-blood non-Indian because her father's tribe counts membership by the mother, and her mother's tribe counts membership by the father. And so she was totally unenrollable, but had a CDIB card that's like 1/1. You know, these and other kinds of fictions, and I would never claim to speak for any other tribe but my own. In fact, I don't claim to speak for my own, I speak for myself. But from the vision of somebody who's worked in academia and has thought and pondered a lot about the way the United States has dealt with indigenous peoples, it is my opinion that that is a strategy to get rid of us. So that's generally my response. I had one woman at the Autry, very angry. She came up to me and she said that she was Cherokee and how Cherokee was I. And I said, I'm a citizen. Because she seemed really confused and upset. And then she told me in all seriousness that she was a third. Which is mathematically problematic. I don't think we're enough generations out to come back around to a third. It's hard. I don't mean to make fun of people who are confused and have fallen away from a community, but if you're going to claim a thing, it's useful to have been part of it, right? So I live in a city and I'm urban, but my father was born and raised in northeastern Oklahoma, and one of my grandmother's houses was actually within the Quapaw territory there. Spent a lot of time at home with a great-grandmother who was extremely serious about tradition, to the point that when I was a kid, she was made fun of, and now she's a bit of a hero. I mean, she's gone, but they remember her for preserving some things that were sort of on the way out, if not, right? The fashion changes. It sways back and forth. And, you know, I try never to judge anybody, but it's really hard when somebody's yelling at you and then tells you a thing that is patently impossible. I've got to develop tricks about not responding to that. People have their own freight to bear. And I have to say, I think some of my success has been that I'm not phenotypically what people expect. Because I think it sneaks up on them. Not that somebody who looks like my brother wouldn't be able to do it, just that the reaction of other people is a huge part of that whole equation, you know? And I think it's incredibly difficult for people when you don't meet their expectations, and that does then stick in their head. There used to be a statue up in the Civic Center that was paid for by James Lick. And one part of it was a pedestal with a cowering Northern Plains-dressed man on his back, and a vaquero, and a Franciscan friar. The friar was pointing at him, and the vaquero's arm was up in success, and it was called the Early Days. And, I mean, it's problematic for a lot of reasons, right? We tried to get it taken down years ago and got that accusation that always comes out. You're trying to rewrite history, which is always accompanied by history is written by the winners, which it's patently not. History is written by the people with pens. And you know what? I've got a pen. But also, there are a lot of honoring statues for a lot of things that didn't win. I mean, all of the Civil War stuff that you see, that group didn't win. So it's nonsense, like most of it. I started writing about the statue, about history in San Francisco, the things people didn't understand. Nobody lost a war right there. That's not what happened. I thought of it at first like a discipline, and I wrote a poem a day for 45 days, something like that. It was some ridiculous number of days. So I published one of these poems every day, on Facebook. I do it a lot. Feel free to like my writer page. There were a lot of people getting up to testify at the hearings about getting rid of this statue who were taking a historical tack. And I just got up and told the board how very disappointed I was in them. And then at one point, one of them was like, why do you keep talking about this? And I'm like, how dare you think that you got a Native laureate that I wasn't going to talk about this? I spend so much time downtown now. You know, I had to walk by that thing so many times. But the worst part was when some of the kids who are already aliased from their communities because they're in an urban setting. And this one kid was talking to me and he said, how did they kill him? And I was like, that has to come down. So I was referring to the thing quite frequently as the cake topper for the wedding between racialized violence and historical inaccuracy. A joke that a lot of people didn't get, but they did print it in the newspaper, and I ended up frequently getting questioned about that. During the very last of the hearings about taking the statue down, which, by the way, they did, we won, and it wasn't just me, although I get a lot of credit for it. There are about 5 Indigenous women in San Francisco who are in serious positions of power right now, and it took every one of us. So anyway, that last testimony, they set a man next to me for the whole testimony who was like whispering at me that he was going to tear my eyes out. And by the end of it, I was like, you know, dude, we'll be done in about an hour. And I have some time at that point. It's like it's starting to get to me. Then he made the mistake of saying it near one of the sheriff's deputies, and he was escorted out because apparently it is actually illegal to do that. So that was a body of work that attracted a lot of attention, mostly by the newspaper. But we were a variety of people from a lot of different places, and at least 3 of us were Indigenous California Native people, which was nice. So that's the story of those poems.
Hear from that series of 55 poems about the statue Early Days by Kim Shock, recorded in 2018 at the San Francisco Public Library.
The fourth early day. A statue is not a library. It's not a book. But if it were low-income housing, it'd be gone by now. Removing a statue is not burning a book. With or without the statue, we will remember, and you have already forgotten. The fifth early day. Taking down a statue isn't genocide any more than removing a building is genocide. And how many buildings have been razed in the last 3 years? How many buildings over 50 years old? How many tent cities? How many people over 50? Their histories thrown into trash trucks. Sweep, they call it. Don't touch the bronze casting, the metal that doesn't bleed, the metal that isn't hunted back to its village and dragged to a mission for forced labor. The culture of statues is safe. The eighth early day, and this is going to be the last of this series because I start getting really irritated. If civic art was simply a matter of art, we could have this discussion. If people deciding how other people were represented was simply a matter of self-expression, we could talk over my kitchen table into the small hours. We could laugh and compare and opine. If a small group of people, not including any representatives of another group, are deciding how that group are seen by every tourist and visiting dignitary in one of the most storied cities in the Western Hemisphere, a group that is still colonized, whose members are still habitually raped at a rate more than twice the national average, whose young people see so little hope that the teen suicide rates are described as at crisis levels, then this is not a discussion about art. Because you're not just deciding on a sculpture, you're deciding our worth. This is a petty exercise of power, and you have leashed your reputations to that story and that statue.
Kim Shock at the San Francisco Public Library, reading from her poems about the now-deposed statue, Early Days. There's a link to that 2018 reading on our website, newletters.org. Kim has a penchant for writing serial poems, as her other 2019 book proves. Murdered Missing from Foothills Publishing is a very personal collection, with 50 short poems shining a light on a dark problem in our society. Here's San Francisco's poet laureate, Kim Shock, back at Haskell Indian Nations University Library.
I wrote an extremely disturbing book last year. I lost my daughter 7 years ago. And Anita Lucchese at the Sovereign Bodies Institute is doing maps of murdered and missing Indigenous women. And she's often in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we lost another woman, and she was beaten so badly that she went into a coma and then died. San Francisco likes to think of itself as an incredibly open-minded place. Well, she died in the hospital from a beating, and the San Francisco police decided that she committed suicide. It inspired me to write for a while to try to convince the Board of Supervisors to encourage the police to perhaps investigate it in a little more deeply way. I've managed to embarrass the city into other behavior in the past, and I thought perhaps I could do that. It's actually gotten to the point where if I attend a Board of Supervisors meeting, when I walk in the door, the Board of Supervisors, all of the members, start flipping through their list of things that's on the docket to see what I might be there to yell at them about. So I'm afraid I'm making myself unpleasant. It's not really my intention, but I'm not afraid to do it. So the book's called Murdered Missing. I'm not taking a penny for it. And that act actually encouraged the publisher to take half of what they normally would. So basically they're getting reimbursed for their time and for the printing of it. So if you buy this book from us or online, the money goes to the Sovereign Bodies Institute. I don't want any. Not for this. Other things maybe. You know you're being depressing when writing critics start calling your work important. They use other words when it's fun. But this one's sort of getting, this is important work. Yeah, I knew it was sad when I wrote it, too. Here's how this happened. I wrote the 50 poems and posted them all on Facebook. And a lot of people were agitating to have me put it together as a book. And I couldn't imagine why anyone would want that much sad in one hand. You know? But so many people asked, I thought, well, we'll do it. I tell other younger poets when they come read for me that if you can't make yourself cry with your own work, quit. So apparently... You know, I used to write about flowers. My deal with the world is when this stops, I'll go back to writing about flowers. Day one. Somewhere, she's afraid. Right now. It hurts to be strangled. The body panics. She's silenced. Might die of stroke, pulmonary edema, the arteries might tear, her head feels as if it may explode. This can take up to 5 minutes. Day two, blamed for her own death, bled out in a motel bathtub. In court, the defendant's attorney made her as inhuman as possible, brought body parts into court, her lifestyle, her identity at fault. As if the murder were a logical conclusion, as if her attacker had no choice, as if we were provocation in skin, another acceptable sacrifice. Day three. Shot. Dead named. Misgendered. Even the way they looked for you was a violence, each detail a complex inaccuracy, targeted as acceptable loss. You are loved in your own name now. We see you. Day four. Communities mended over and over. Light story touches the ones literally missing. Patched gatherings, families stiff with protective stitching. Our lost are not gone just once, but every waking morning, every song without their voices, each time, every time, for all time. I can't read that one. Day six. Mother in Manitoba looking at her daughter's picture on a billboard, admires her smile, hears her voice in dreams. When the snow thaws, they search for Jennifer, dig through the trash, a family event. Day seven, disappeared is not good enough. Will it take a generation of Indigenous art dedicated only to this? Will it take two? life-size sister sculptures for each woman torn from our communities, the empty cities of us. What is not made difficult is made illegal, if not marginalized, then poisoned, pulled apart, unfinished weaving. You've not just come for our traditional stories. You've come for our future. Day 9. Someone asks me how she is. I hold that moment, because until I tell them what happened, half of the people in the conversation hold her alive in imagination. As much as I practice, as awkward as the next part of the story is going to be, I enjoy them not knowing. Day 10. Because baby and mother trade cells, the first gift, before crayon drawings and paper weaving. Mother is a kind of mythological creature, a micro-chimera, carrying pieces of our missing daughters, our bodies a private museum of loss. We're going to see how many more of these I can do. Day 15. Borders are the sites of field amputations, and this 200 years has sharpened the clumsy exposed bones, this town, this road, a canal and locks that help the money flow at specific levels, this town with razored visible bone, this machine of commerce decorates itself with the bodies of our daughters. Their deaths are not collectively a symptom. Each one is a gasping tragedy, a name we whisper as the year thins, as the light changes, as the money passes along the blacktop canal and the parasites gather at the site of the injury, a place where blood can be encouraged to flow. Day 47. The cities around this water are dangerous. Pull our relatives in. Pull them under. Sidewalks held together with bodies, myth held together with the dead and with rumors, whispers of where the others might have gone. Day 48. He sat there and said to me, her attacker probably thought she was a prostitute. I let that comment sit between us for a moment. Then said, why would he have thought that? She wasn't. He blinked. I continued, is being stabbed 50 times the penalty for turning tricks these days? Day 49. On a morning like this, we need our family around us. Make songs to invite you back. There is a loneliness in our worlds. It calls for answers. It rattles. And we sing. Day 50. If community is a matter of keeping score, we all give each other reasons not to search for us. Because being a human being isn't easy, but we owe it to our ancestors, recent and distant, to repatriate their stories, to sing them home, and to live the brightest possible moments in their honor.
San Francisco poet laureate Kim Shock, recorded in 2019 at Haskell Indian Nations University's library, Murdered Missing won the Penn Oakland Censorship Award, and now her 2020 chapbook, Whose Water, is out from Mammoth Publications. Kim Shock is curating a series by various poets for the San Francisco Public Library during this pandemic. It's called Poem of the Day. For links, visit newletters.org. From UMKC's New Letters Magazine, this show, with music from Kevin MacLeod's and Compotech.com, was produced with Amina Dalton, Shannon Ashley, Olivia Gallo, and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.